the law, love our neighbors. Short-term mission is super important in that area. Let's go to the next one. It encourages saints on the field and strengthens the faith and assurance of those who participate. The way we do missions in the OPC is that, and we'll talk about that in a few slides, but almost all of our foreign fields welcome short-termers in some capacity. And, you know, a part of our going is actually to encourage our missionaries. As a matter of fact, that could be the purpose of a short-term missions team, to go and be an encouragement to those who serve full-time. Next one. It may raise up future career missionaries from this present generation. As I look at our foreign missionaries, and actually a lot of our pastors even, many of them sense the call to the ministry through short-term missions. Many of our foreign missionaries, they didn't just, you know, wake up one day saying, I think I want to be a missionary, but many of them tested those gifts and tested that calling through short-term missions. And so it really is through that next, in preparing for that next generation of missionaries, short-term missions is helpful in that. Next slide. Finally, it plants seeds of faith that will last forever. You know, the impact of short-term missions, it's pretty much a lifelong thing. How many of you have been on some sort of short-term missions experience? It could be domestic, international, something like that. Do you remember it at all, or is it a very vague memory? I'd say you probably remember it much more than you remember the week before or the week after you went. I mean, it stands out maybe as a highlight that year. I made the mistake one time. I remember going to Eritrea in 1995. I don't remember what. That was probably the biggest thing that happened that year, and then I remembered that I got married that year. So that was a big mistake. But setting that aside, it probably is a highlight for you. Even as you think back to your life and the things you've experienced, short-term mission opportunities, hopefully they're good. They don't always end up good, but if hopefully they're good, they can really be impactful for your lifetime. Next. We're going to run through a little slideshow here. It's going to move. I'm going to try to keep up with it. There's no music, so I'm going to talk. And this is a taste of what this is. I think from 2017. We haven't done one in recent years, but you'll get a sense. We're going to walk through the different fields where we do short-term missions, and I'll talk through them as we go. Okay, let's see if we can run it. Again, this is 2017. Boardwalk Chapel. Boardwalk Chapel is in Wildwood, New Jersey. This is on the shore, Jersey Shore. And the Boardwalk Chapel has become a big training ground for short-term missions. Teams go there all summer long. There's summer staff who is there all summer as short-termers. And then there are youth groups that come for a week at a time, for about 12 weeks. They're right there on the boardwalk. Maybe if you can hit that thing and see if it pauses. Okay, I'm going to stop there for that. You did it. Good. The Boardwalk Chapel, OPC Pastor Jim Zazar is the director of the chapel. He actually came through that area as an unbeliever, saw the Boardwalk Chapel as an unbeliever. I don't think he came to faith through the Boardwalk Chapel. But most of us who are familiar with the Boardwalk Chapel see it as from a ministry standpoint. He saw it as an outsider. And Jim Zazar will say that at the Boardwalk Chapel, we offer you the only thing that you need that you can't pay for. Everybody else is selling you ice cream that you can pay for that you don't need, you know, cotton candy, T-shirts that you probably should never be seen wearing, with logos that are probably, you know, not proper. I mean, all sorts of stuff is being sold to you, shoved in your face, and he says we are the only ones on the boardwalk who's selling you who's offering what you can't buy, but what you really need. And so the Boardwalk Chapel, this is not a picture of it, but the previous ones, it's a chapel with the doors open to the boardwalk. So people are walking by, and most of the day, the people who are there, they're doing witnessing, they're, you know, sharing the faith of people who've come there for their vacation, who are there for a good time. but presenting them with what they really need. And then in the evening, they do a program, and it's just a great training ground for cold call evangelism. I mean, face-to-face, like really being challenged with what you believe. And so Boardwalk Chapel has just become a really, really grown and developed. It's been a part of the OPC since the 1940s. One of our OPC ministers, Reverend Dunn, had the foresight to buy that property. It's probably a multi-million-dollar property now, but the building is pretty old and doesn't look like a multi-million-dollar. But what they're doing there is priceless, right? Okay, English camp. English camp. By the way, anybody here know English? You are qualified for short-term missions. English is a big part of what we do in short-term missions. Yeah, you probably have to let it run because we stopped it, so it'll buzz through again. English is a huge part of what we do with short-term missions because you know what? A lot of the world wants to learn what? English. And in God's providence, we have English. We have what the world wants to use and wants to learn. And so it becomes this point of engagement for us to interact with folks. And so English camp is very much used. This is the Czech Republic. The Farniks serve there, and they very much use teams coming through. They do an English camp. Like it's a family camp. It's all age family camp, but they teach English. And wow, beautiful place in the world to go to experience Prague and all that, and yet have this opportunity for this ministry experience. English club. See the kind of you'll start seeing that theme down in Uruguay. They welcome folks to come down and help. Now Uruguay's being so it's south of the equator, so their summer is kind of the opposite of ours. So if you want to have summer during winter, you can go down there and help. Quebec, yeah, I understand you. This is Quebec, right? I understand you guys had Ben Westervelt come recently, which is awesome. And I think this would be a great venue for you. They do 3 or 4 or 5 weeks of English camp, and it really has been their offering to the community in a service way. And very multicultural. This kind of characterizes Ben's church. Haiti, we're blessed to have the Hops down there, and they welcome a team. They've been. This was one of the things that we started out of Southern California was sending the team to Haiti. This tends to be more of a young college age group, and this last year that we had to cancel for the first time. Bill Welzine is in Key West, Florida, and he does open-air evangelism talks, and he does training on evangelism, and so he welcomes folks to come down to beautiful Key West, beautiful, how about a January short-term missions trip to Key West? That would be awesome, right? And stay at their place. They provide the places to stay, and it's all great. Team Praha, again, back in Czech Republic. This is more of a young people group that goes down. They go for 3 weeks and do various vacation Bible schools and things, outreaching to young people and children. This gal from Long Beach Church in Southern California brought a team, has for several years, to one of our churches in Utah. Very difficult place to plant a church in the heart of Mormon country. And so they've did a bunch of construction on Christ OPC there in Utah. There is a OPC, there's two OPC churches on an Indian reservation in Wisconsin, and they welcome this Venture Missions group that comes. They call it Venture Missions, but they're doing a vacation Bible school for a bunch of the kids on the Indian reservation, Menominee OPC for the Menominee Indian tribes. Okay, so that was just to give you, hopefully, it's a little fast. I need to slow it down, that'll probably help, but gives you a swath of a flavor of what goes on with short-term missions. We welcome churches to invite teams to come. You guys could have a team come here. If you had a project or something you were trying to do, some sort of outreach event, you said, boy, we'd like for folks to come and help us. By the way, I don't know if Ben mentioned it, but I was very encouraged when I had the opportunity to visit Quebec and to learn that their church received teams coming in to teach English in French-speaking Canada. And then later in the summer, their church, their French-speaking church, goes to, I think, a church in Newfoundland or something like that. And they do a French camp to English-speaking Canada. So you guys could invite them to come and do a French camp. I don't know if people would come to it. But if they would come, then, you know, that's just, I'd love to see that reciprocating of ministry going together. All right, let's see what else we got here. This is a map of the world, in case you didn't know. I have to tell that to Americans because we don't really know anything but the United States. This is a map of the world. I won't ask you what all the colors are or the countries or anything like that. But so you can see that this identifies all the places in the world where the OPC has missionaries. And again, as I mentioned before, I'm happy to report that all of them welcome short-termers in one capacity or another. Some of them, short-termers are, it's a lot of work for the field. And so they recognize that. And so some say, I'll use Ukraine in for example, Hiro Hockebird and the team there, they basically say, we have one team come in the year and they help us with an English camp, again, that they do for university students that they are trying to reach in Lviv. But that is the 1 week that they are willing to have a big team of short-termers come. But if others said, well, we'd like to go, you know, I'm an individual, I'd like to come spend the summer, is there work I could do? They will welcome that. But for big teams coming, it's varied. Uganda, for example, Uganda is always welcoming short-termers. If a team wanted to come, they'd figure out how to do it. It's difficult for teams to go to Uganda. It's expensive. You got to get a bunch of shots and a lot of travel, and so it's hard for a team to go, but a lot of individuals go, and you'd be welcome to go there and serve with them. I'd recommend probably like 3 weeks or more, just because it takes you probably 48 hours of travel, flight and road travel, just to get to the field, and significant expense in travel. But wow, very cross-cultural and impactful. So anyways, they all welcome short-termers, and we'd love to see them go. This is outside English-speaking Canada and the United States, but we do, as I mentioned, we have stuff in the United States and could in Canada as well. Again, church plants or churches that are doing a project are welcome to invite teams, and we'd help, you know, advertise it and put the word out. So let's go to the next slide. We have, anybody been to our website, opcstm.org? Anybody seen that? So one of the brochures has our URL. That's the point of the brochure, is to point you to the website. We revamped this website a couple years ago, and pretty much boiled it down to, when you come to this website, you got two places to go. Are you new to short-term missions, or you're ready to plan a trip? And if you're new, we got a couple items that you'll get signed up for the Storm Report, which is the newsletter that I already passed around, that type of thing. But if you're ready to plan a trip, you click on that, and I think that's what I have next. We have a roadmap. So you might say, okay, well, we are ready to plan a trip. You know, what do we do? How do we get started? And so if you click on that one, you'll get to this roadmap, and basically we start walking you through 7 steps. The first one is investigate 5 to 9 months before. So if you're thinking about summer of next year, and you say, David, you know, we're interested in doing something, boom, what do we start doing right now? Well, what I'd encourage you to do is check out the opportunities that we have, take a look at the different photos and testimonials. When those who go, they come back. My assistant, Janet, is working hard trying to get testimonials out of them, so you can read up on tons of people's experience. That's all on the website. Begin to pray. That's going to be fundamental in all these. Pray for open doors, wisdom, and clarity as to the right opportunity. Step 2, initiate 4 to 6 months before. So this is if you're thinking, again, next summer. This is probably, starting January-ish. You want to start reaching out to the contact person for that opportunity you're interested in. By the way, this is all on the website, so if you feel like you're like, you can't even see what's up there, just go to the website, but this is all from there. Fill out any application that's necessary. While you're waiting to hear if you're accepted, consider how you might raise funds for going on a trip. And that's something, again, you can think about as a church, how to do that. I encourage individuals who desire to go, I encourage them to communicate with your elders. I think it's great to be, I think it's biblical to be sent. I think that even short-term missions, we should be sent. It's not just individualistic, like, hey, I feel called to go do whatever, but you may feel called, go talk to your elders and say, I feel called, but do you think I should go? Do you think that this would be good for me to do? It would be helpful. Ask for their blessing in this endeavor. And your elders and pastors can become your marketing department. They're the ones who then say, yeah, we actually would like to see Susie go to, wherever it is, and we'd like you to prayerfully consider supporting her in prayer and funding. Ask for permission to have donations for your short-term expenses be given to fund the church. You can't receive donations directly, but it's helpful for churches if it's through Deacons Fund or other means that people who want to contribute towards you going can give those donations. And then pray for the support of your elders in the church and your fundraising. Okay, so this is how we initiate. Number three, begin to raise those funds. Again, this is in that 3 to 5 months. We talk about writing a support letter if that's needed, where to send that. If the church can't contribute as a whole out of our budget, then maybe we can send the letter to individuals. Pray for the Lord's provision. Number four, prepare for the trip. Start the preparations. Follow the guidance you receive from the trip coordinator. So a lot of the work that we do is we're a coordinator, but we're really we're communicating the opportunities. We're making the aware of the opportunities, but we do not get between the field and those who are going. We point, we try to connect individuals and the field, and once we've got them connected, we let them interact and direct. And so we don't tell the field how to do things. The field knows how they want to do things and the different aspects of that. And so begin to interact with the field. Getting tickets and all that type of stuff. And then we have resources for people to begin to prepare. We encourage connecting with the rest of the team, maybe through Skype meetings or social media or whatever. If it's from abroad, if it's the church sending a team, then maybe you start having team meetings. And again, keep praying. Number five, prepare yourself for going. This is in the month or months before. Ask a few people to be praying specifically for you and the trip. Give them a list of your concerns and fears. Begin to become familiar with where you're going, whatever it is, whether it's to Utah or the Boardwalk Chapel or to Haiti. It'd be good for you to have a sense of the climate and the religions and the history and who they are. You get to know your audience, so to speak. Maybe learn some phrases in the local language. If it's a foreign field you're going to, begin to journal. I'm a big advocate of journaling when you're on a short-term missions trip. I think that that's a big, important part of the experience and helping that really be something that the Lord is using to shape you. And so you can even begin this journal even before you go, talking about what are your anticipations are, what's your hopes, fears, expectations. And it'd be interesting to reflect on those after you've gone and see how you learned through the process. Do some extra Bible study. Many short-termers report afterwards they wish they'd done this before the trip. And I think that what happens oftentimes is we accelerate into like getting to go and we become so busy with preparations that we actually lose our spiritual disciplines when we actually should be accelerating into our spiritual disciplines in preparation for going. And so just knowing this in advance and knowing just highlighting this hopefully will result in in that happening more. Try to get extra rest. Doesn't usually happen. And pray that the Lord will open your heart as you go to serve. Number six. So while on the field, so that's all your preparations. While on the field, submit to the oversight of local missionaries and team leaders. So important. They are God's ordained people in those capacities, and we need to submit in the Lord to them. That's the best thing we can do. The worst thing about short-term missions is when the team kind of goes rogue and thinks that they understand the field better than those who are there and second-guess them and do their own thing. It doesn't happen too much, thankfully, but we need to go as servants. Be flexible. I just always stress this. It's not a question of if things will go wrong, it's a question of when things will go wrong. And so they talk about always being flexible and being okay. You know, that's part of the experience. Flights get canceled or changed or whatever. It's part of the learning experience. I actually kind of silently rejoice in those those trials, because I think that's really good for us to have trials and to rejoice in those. Refrain from complaining. Rather, in everything, give thanks. Be a servant. Be a learner. Practice humility. Keep journaling what the Lord's teaching you through the process, and then prayer continually. So that's on the field, and then when we return, reflect on what the Lord did. Again, it's biblical to report. It'd be great for our churches to invite people to report. We send them, and then when they come back, they report on what the Lord did through them, just as the Apostle Paul reported to Antioch when he returned. Including this report, a thank you to all those who supported. Ask your pastors and elders set aside for you to present. Just talked about that. We have a survey there that we typically try to learn from those who go, and then maybe share those photos and testimonials. But that's kind of gives you the rundown. It's all on the website, so this is hopefully to help you as you think about, and this is very applicable, whether you serve through OPC short-term missions or something else, most of this stuff is applicable, and hopefully this roadmap will be applicable to you. Let's go to the next slide. We have a couple of Facebook pages where things are posted. You can like those pages if you're on Facebook. And we'll talk more about disaster response tonight, but disaster response is a super helpful page with regards to staying in tune with what's happening in active disaster zones. Those, when we're reporting on disasters, these posts have a lot of traction. But short-term missions, it's also a great way to learn of opportunities as they rise. Next one. And then I've mentioned a few times the storm report, short-term outreach, relief, and missions. This comes out monthly, and through the storm report, you will be kept apprised of new opportunities as they arise, and reporting as those happen. Next one. So I'm going to pause there, and I have no idea what I'm doing for time. Well, how long does this go? Okay. He said just go as long as I want. Okay. I won't do that. Do you have questions about short-term missions before I shift a little bit of the focus into the committee work? Yes?
It mentioned on the website the STM training. What does that stand for, and how do you...
Yeah, sorry. STM is short-term missions. So we use the STM, becomes part of our parlance. So the STM training is talking in more details about a lot of the stuff I just talked about. Yeah, it's before, and it's the training that I have on there is training that I prepared. Actually, Ben Westerveld had asked me to prepare it, and so I've used that with teams that go to Quebec. It's initially like just kind of high level training about just how to think about short term missions and stuff. Some of the stuff I just talked about. And then the field will do their own training with regards to, okay, you're coming to Quebec, here's what you need to know about Quebec. Yeah. Yep. Any other questions or thoughts? Or yes, ma'am. It's a lot of young people, but it's not all young people. The team, the English camp to Czech Republic, is predominantly older folks. That is a camp They do a family camp, and it's all ages. But they're doing, it's intensive teaching of English. And so they have, they divide, of course, they divide the kids and adults, but then those kids and adults, they will divide them according to their language ability. And so they've got the beginners, they've got the more advanced, and so they separate them into classes, and they do classes all day, every day during the week. And so it's a lot of adults, and then they do a lot of things that are more pointedly evangelistic in nature, more in the evenings. But a lot of these are more young people. Why? Because, you know, one of the things I'm learning as I'm going through life is that there are times in life that short-term missions or disaster response is something you can do, and there's times in life when you've got, I know you guys have small families here, but if you had like 8 and 9 kids, some of you have 8 or 9 kids, that's wonderful. I only have 5, I have a very small family, but you know, there's times in life where life is really, really busy. And I mean, I have, my oldest is in college right now, and my youngest is 7, so we're at all ages of the spectrum, and it's, life is busy, you know. And so during college, late high school, college age is a wonderful time for short-term missions. I think retirees is a wonderful time, or empty nesters is a wonderful time. And people who are in the midst of crazy life, it's less so. But that doesn't mean they can't go and shouldn't go. Yeah, that's great. That's a great question. Yeah, so it's yes, all of the above. It depends on the field. Depends on the churches. Some churches are big and they can send a whole team. A lot of our OP churches are small, and so, and that's one of whom we're trying to serve. And so, when Haiti says we want a team, that team is predominantly from Southern California. That's actually who organizes it. But in recent years, they've been having a harder time getting enough people on the team. So then we take that opportunity and we say, Team Haiti, predominantly from Southern California, actually is inviting others to go. Would you like to go? And so we fill out that team, and now more than half of the team is coming from all over the OPC. So that's a great way for individuals to go. But think of an example where it's predominantly a church. I think the teams in Uruguay have been predominantly 4 or 5 people from a church go down there, but then some others get added on. It's totally organic. There's no one size fits all. And frankly, the more expensive faraway places, I mean, a church sending a big team to Uganda is just, that's just not going to happen. And so that's a great time to have a bunch of individuals maybe collaborate as a team, or a lot of individuals go, or couples, or that type of thing. So there's no cookie cutter type of thing. Any other questions? Good. Thank you. I look forward to seeing where you guys will be going next. And we'll be praying to that end. It is really an awesome way to even connect as a church, because you spend hours and hours and, you know, travel and time together doing ministry together. It really is a great way to knit even a church together. And I'm glad that your leaders are desiring this. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how the Lord will use you in this way. Let's take a shift. We're going to shift to, I'm taking the opportunity to be down here to share with you a little bit about kind of some of how the OPC is organized and one aspect of that organization. So the General Assembly elects committees to oversee different aspects of its work, and you can just buzz through these. We have a Committee on Foreign Missions, Committee on Home Missions. So these are committees that oversee these aspects of the work of the church, Christian education. There's a new ministerial care. You just heard that they have brochures out. But there's also a committee on diaconal ministries. That's kind of unique to the OPC. It's not entirely unique, but a lot of our sister churches actually don't have a committee on diaconal ministries. And this has actually been a long part of the history of the OPC. It goes back to the, I don't know, 40s or 50s or something like that, where we carrying a ministry of mercy and overseeing that and the importance of that as a part of our slate of different ministries has been a part of the ethos of the OPC. This is the Committee on Diaconal Ministries. We have 9 church officers. Again, these are men who are elected by the General Assembly to serve in this capacity. It's 3 ministers, 2 ruling elders, and 4 deacons, and then I serve as administrator for that committee. We meet 2 times a year. We'll actually be meeting later in October, face-to-face, 2 times face-to-face, but we break out the work under a lot of subcommittees, 5 subcommittees, so that those subcommittees are carrying out a lot of the work on a regular basis. And it's very interesting to see our full committee meetings, the amount of work is just really scaled down as we are able to be active all the time with the work of these subcommittees. Next. A lot of funds come in. We do, with the General Assembly's blessing, we ask for generally like $25 per communicant member is what's asked. We receive about $300,000 is about what comes in to the general fund for the Committee on Diaconal Ministries. And then there's a special fund. This is the Obadiah Fund. This was a gift of a member of the OPC a little over 10 years ago, said, I'm going to give a gift of $150,000, and I'd like this to be used for our retired ministers and widows. And that gift was renewed the next year and the next year and the next year. And so every year since then, $150,000 has come in specifically for the care of our ministers, those who have given their lives in ministry of the church. So that's been wonderful. We've actually transferred the oversight of that to the new Committee on Ministerial Care. And so they have that as a resource to be able to use to carry out their work. And then when a disaster happens, money pours in. A lot of generosity. You can see the numbers here. If you can see them, $122,000 came in for Hurricane Florence last year when we had the 3 hurricanes hit 3 presbyteries within 3 weeks of each other in 2017. $670,000 came in from churches, but also sister churches. Disaster response has been a wonderful avenue for interaction with our sister churches. And actually, about half of the volunteers who went to Houston in response to Hurricane Harvey actually came from outside the OPC. And so very thankful for that. Just walk through the different areas where the committee serves the church. I mentioned the retired ministers and widows. Again, this work is done through the Presbyterian Diaconal Committee. Let's go next. Number 2. The OPC, we have sister churches around the world, and sometimes those sister churches go through their own trials and their own difficulties, and like there's a famine in Kenya, you know, and so we may receive a request from those sister churches saying, hey, can you come alongside us? And so we are the ones to oversee those kind of requests. Each of our 4 mission fields have a ministry, not each of them, but a lot of them have a ministry of word, but also a ministry of deed. And so a big significant one of those is the hospital in Karamoja, Uganda. Akision Ayesu Presbyterian Church. Anybody know what that means? Akision Ayesu? This has been kind of the historic name of the various clinics and hospitals that the OPC has had as part of our mission fields all the way back since the 60s. We've always had a hospital or a clinic demonstrating that the ministry of mercy is at the core. We do, I mean, that is at the heart of who, you know, sometimes the OPC were accused of, you know, being all doctrine, you know, but we do actually care about people, and that can be demonstrated through our 4 mission fields. And this is Akision Ayesu in Karamojong, I guess here, is the compassion of Jesus. The compassion of Jesus. It was Meherete Yesu Hospital in Eritrea, which would have been in Tigrinya. And here's the clinic. And I welcome you to go there and see it firsthand and work with them. Wonderful field to visit and participate in. Next. We have in recent years been interested in the work of our missionary deacons. These are men who go to serve alongside of our missionaries and help them in their work. At that clinic, there's a doctor, Flip Bardman, who's actually from Holland, and currently the Committee on Diaconal Ministries provides the Foreign Missions Committee with 100% of Flip's support. And then there's a missionary deacon, Mark Van Essendelft, who's there out of the URC. And he's a great brother, very thankful for him and the work he's doing there, and we provide half of his support. We also send folks down to Haiti when there are needs that arise, facility needs, that type of thing, and so we're able to use some leftover disaster funds to help men with their men and women with their travel down to Haiti as needed. I think the most important aspect of the work of the Committee on Diaconal Ministries is encouraging local deacons. And one of the things we talk about with regards to diaconal ministry is that despite it being in our name, the Committee on Diaconal Ministries, we really don't do diaconal ministries. Diaconal ministries is done by our deacons locally. They're the ones who are serving. It's very personal ministry. It's face-to-face. It's boots on the ground. A lot of private matters may be dealing with. And so the best thing we can be doing is encouraging our deacons. And so a couple years ago, we started having summits in 2010. I think if you click to the next slide, you'll see a photo of that. This is actually a little bit of a deceptive photo because this was a joint General Assembly Deacon Summit. And so we've got, but there's more deacons in that picture than men who are General Assembly men, which is pretty cool, I think. So there's about 200 deacons there, and so we encourage them. We try to have more and more publications on the work of deacons in New Horizons, Ordained Servant. We have a quarterly Mercy Minute that we put out, and the deacons, I'm going to make sure that they're all in my email list before I leave here. Okay, let's keep going. And then we've really been developing, we're actually about to launch our own website, opccdm.org, despite .com, whatever it is on the brochure. And we just came out with that brochure. Actually, you guys are the first ones to receive the brochure. And we've been mailing that to our churches. But the website's about to be launched. But we've really been having a growing list of resources and desire to continue to do that. We do try to apply a Presbyterian form of government to how we do diaconal ministries. And so all of our churches locally have deacons. Hopefully, if they don't, then they have the session oversees that ministry. And that's mostly where diaconal ministry happens. But sometimes those needs exceed the capacity of a local church. And so I say this to deacons, and I'll say this to you. If there's ever a legitimate needs that deacons face, and they say, yeah, if we had the resources, we should pay for this. They should never, because of our structure, never say, well, the buck stops here, that's all I got, you know, we can't help you. Because they can actually bubble that up to your presbytery. Presbytery in Northwest has its own diaconal committee, and they can share that need across the different churches of the presbytery, ministering to that one family, maybe that one individual in one congregation. And sometimes those needs can even be bubbled up all the way to the denominational level, where we can spread that across our 300 plus churches, that need coming all supplying down into that one family. And so you can see really an expression of the communion of saints as we minister. We share our gifts and graces with each other, as our confession talks about, and in a real tangible way. And this is a wonderful aspect of our Presbyterian form of government as we apply that to diaconal ministries. Next. So because of those diaconal committees, we see those as that's kind of the link between the local deacons and the Committee on Diaconal Ministries, and so they're super important. We try to really help them and encourage them. Next, we've been having a summit for them, and we actually have that next week. We'll be meeting with 30-some men, a couple of them from the Presbyterian Northwest in Chicago area, and we'll be encouraging them in their labors to be in contact with the local deacons and ministering to needs that arise. And they also do minister to ministers. That's a big part of the work of the Presbytery Diaconal Committees. So, yep, next. And then disaster response, the second to last here. We'll be talking about this a bit more this evening. But really being, again, this is really where the whole church comes together to minister to the needs of maybe a couple households that have a huge, significant needs, and again, a great way for us to work with our sister churches. Next. Yeah, one more. And we have a website. Should look somewhat familiar. This is kind of like the short-term missions, how to volunteer, how to donate. We'll talk about that more tonight. And then finally, refugee relief is something we've been working on for the last 4 or 5 years. There's unprecedented number of people who are asking for how do we help. There are record numbers of displaced people in the world right now, more than after World War II, where, you know, half of the world was in chaos. We've been working with our sister churches and trying to figure things out. Keep going. There's a lot of evidence of openness to the gospel in the Muslim world. Ministry of Word and Deed. We've sent some funds to Greece and other places, and we're looking for more here. I understand you guys are in the process of seeking to help refugees, which is awesome. And Canada is very much more welcome to refugees than America, I'm sad to say. I've done a lot of presentations on refugee ministry, and I would just say that boils down to this. We are called to love. We are called to love our neighbors. We are encouraged not to be people of fear. Apparently, that's one of the biggest commands in Scripture. 365 times is, thou shalt not fear. And actually, there's only one person we're supposed to fear. And so we're not supposed to be fearful. And that's what we, you know, at least in America, we are very much imposed upon this whole concept of fear, of fearfulness. But there's also a very significant ministry to the stranger. And so those are themes that we see in Scripture, and so it stretches us to reach out to the refugee and the stranger in our midst. But the Lord can really use that in powerful ways, and I look forward to seeing how He does that here locally, but even throughout the denomination. In Clarkston, Georgia, we're thankful to see the Cashins go there. It's probably the highest concentration of refugees in the U.S., 15 minutes from Redeemer OPC in Atlanta, Georgia. And in God's providence at that church is probably the only pastor in the OPC who I know of who was a refugee, Pastor Zacharias Abraham. And I don't know if you guys, you know, was that before your time, or you guys know his history of fleeing from Eritrea. He was kind of one of our lead pastors there and fled from Eritrea, his family being estranged from his family separated from his family for three years, and finally being able to come. And then God would place him as an OPC minister 15 minutes from the highest concentration of refugees. Really awesome to see God's providence in that and to see the Cashins go there and serve. And I think they're on here somewhere. Keep going. Yep, Cashins, and just keep buzz through a couple more here. And so we're learning through their labors. This is Chris and Grace Ann Cashin. I see them as doing work that's kind of learning how to do so that we can do. We can learn from their efforts there in Clarkston. And so you can continue to pray for them as they're trying to figure out how to do this well. But it's neat to see how the Lord's raised them up. I think that might be my last slide. Yeah. So that's the work of the Committee on Diaconal Ministries in a nutshell. I appreciate your patience and opportunity to share these things with you. And do you have any quick questions on any of that? Okay, well, thank you. I look forward to the opportunity to be back tonight. And Greg?
Thank you, David.
Yeah.
And to David for that wonderful presentation. He's actually going to be here during our fellowship meal. If you have any further questions, if you want to talk to him a little more. And we're going to begin our fellowship meal in just a moment. I'll just ask Annette, are there any special instructions just to go down the usual way? Okay, let me go ahead and pray for us then. Then we can make our way down to the north exit and go down the stairs and begin to partake. Our God and Father,